Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to bring you expert perspectives from a multidisciplinary team on the management of chronic myeloid leukemia in the later line setting. Specialists in the MDT involved in caring for patients with CML share their perspectives on the later line treatment options, minimizing toxicities, and maximizing quality of life in patients with the disease. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Novartis. In this podcast, a nurse specialist and a hematologist explore how to minimize toxicities while maximizing treatment benefit for patients with chronic myeloid leukemia in a case-based discussion.
Hello everyone, my name is Johan Munter. I'm a nurse manager at the Cancer Center at University Hospital in Ghent in Belgium, and I'm currently also president of the European Oncology Nursing Society. Today I'm joined by Professor Andreas Hochhaus, who is head of the Department of Hematology and Medical Oncology at the Jena University Hospital in Jena in Germany. So good day, Professor. Today, we would like to discuss together like how we can minimize the toxicities and while we're maximizing treatment benefits for patients with CML. And of course, we need to recognize that 20 years ago, there was a new treatment for CML, and it was even mentioned on the Time magazine as the cover, that medication, with a new golden bullet, they talked about it. But also, this came with new toxicities and for our patients. So we want to talk about a little bit about toxicities when we are managing patients with CML and their treatment. And for this, we have a case study. This is a 58-year-old man with a Philadelphia chromosome-positive CML in a chronic phase. He is also newly diagnosed with diabetes, and he has a BMI of 30.1. He is also on treatment, on TKI treatment. He was resistant to imatinib, and he is currently taking nilotinib, and side effects with nilotinib could be nausea and vomiting, fatigue, anemia, and increased ALT. So your first question to you, Professor, if you see this kind of patients and you're switching to another TKI, what are your first concerns with these patients?
Yeah, it's a polymorbid patient, of course. He has a diabetes, and we don't know whether this diabetes was developed during the nilotinib therapy, which is possible, actually. If it's a diabetes in the background, not diagnosed so far, and we start nilotinib therapy, we can induce a newly diagnosed diabetes. But his BMI is rather high. Therefore, he is at risk for cardiovascular disease. Therefore, I think nilotinib was not the optimal therapy here in the second line setting, and he did not tolerate nilotinib. I'm not sure if the anemia was caused by nilotinib. It's probably a sign of his CML, but not a side effect to nilotinib. But the vomiting, the nausea, the fatigue, and also, and in particular, the increased liver enzymes are most probably induced by nilotinib. But in any case, I would change therapy because of the diabetes and the high BMI. That means we have several reasons to change therapy to a therapy which is less has less cardiovascular toxicity. And one option is, of course, imatinib. But he was resistant to imatinib, therefore this option fails. It's not available. We need alternatives, and for these alternatives, we have, for instance, other second generation drugs available, like dasatinib or bosutinib. It's of course of interest to know what the reason for the imatinib resistance was. Was it a mutation, a specific mutation, or just resistance outside of mutations? That's important for the selection of the next drug, for the third line drug. My preference were here first bosutinib or dasatinib, if nothing speaks against this, or as an alternative, drugs which are in development, for instance, in clinical trials, We have asciminib now available, a BCR-ABL-specific drug. That means the risk for side effects is much less because it has no effect or to enzymes outside of BCR-ABL. These are my thoughts when I think about the switching to a third line drug.
Okay, thank you very much. And following your thoughts, Professor, do you strengthen this, the importance of doing a comprehensive assessment before we start with the patient so we can outline everything what's going on and also his history of the patient? Because we know that sometimes this kind of patients are referred from primary centers to more expert centers, for example, like a university hospital. This could be the case, for example, in Belgium. And there we think it's very important to have this assessment before we start this treatment or making a treatment decision.
No, absolutely. I'm absolutely in favor of this assessment. Unfortunately, most of the physicians worldwide have no time to do it, and therefore they don't do it because they just treat one patient after the other, and there is no time for a discussion, for an interview with the patient, which is, of course, very unfortunate and not good for the outcome. Therefore, to have you here as a nurse specialist is for me a new experience because I don't know your role in the management of patients, but I can imagine that the role is very beneficial for the assessment of specific side effects because you have options available to find out what is really the case when the patient is at home. Can you summarize what your options are? What are you doing with the patient to assess the patient-reported outcome, but also the adverse events?
Yes, of course. And I think cancer nurses and especially cancer nurses play a crucial role in the management of patients, for example, with CML. We help patients to understand first and manage and cope by providing this information, connecting to evidence-based resources, but also important is the screening and managing treatment-related toxicities and discussing and referring to, for example, psychosocial services. But also the basement assessment is very crucial, like you mentioned, is to follow up not even on the clinical field, but also on a psychosocial field and what's happening with our patients. So that we look in his prehistory, his medical history, but also his personal experience with the treatment, because we know this is very important, for example, to adherence in the future if they're on a long-time scheme. But also we know most of these patients are treated in an outpatient clinic. And like you said, Professor, it's like physicians have a lot of things to do and little time to go in very brief discussions with patients. And there is the role of, like, for example, a clinical nurse specialist or a nurse consultant can support physicians in their consultations with this kind of patients to do these assessments, to go look into what medication they take, is it working, how this medication is going, what kind of toxicities are playing with the patients and their concerns about it. Because we know that patients want to do very well for their treatment because they are also afraid that we will stop the treatment or alter the treatment. And this is very important that we make time. So we have their confidence. They know they can talk about every concern on the treatment. And that we translated, for example, in a multidisciplinary team discussion, what is happening with the patient. So that, for example, the treating physician have a good basis understanding what's going on with the patients and make a good decision to in collaboration with our patients.
And who gives the recommendations to the patient how to deal with adverse events, for instance, with gastrointestinal toxicity? That means how he should change his daily meals or what can be done to avoid diarrhea and so on.
No, this is something we take up as a clinical nurse specialist in or nurse consultant in our patient consultations. We also talk with the patients about it and refer, for example, to a nutritionist or an onco-dietitian so they can support and look with the patients. What is the nutritional status with a patient? What do they need to eat, for example, in this case for our patient for in diarrhea? It could help them support, but also take enough a fluid intake with our patients. What we can do is also preferring like a physical examination before and looking, going through with the patients, for example, to assess and detect, for example, a thromboembolic event, for example, and talking about the patients about it, but also increase their health literacy about CML and the importance of assessing and talking about their side effects and toxicities so they know we can treat them. Because we know all that if they hide it, they most worsen, and it doesn't, and it will affect the overall outcome for our patients.
Yeah. Some drugs should be taken with a meal. Actually, patients told me that when you have gastrointestinal toxicity with imatinib, you should take it with chocolate. It's much better tolerable. These hints, these advices, I think are very important for the individual patient. Other drugs should be taken on an empty stomach, and that's important for the absorption of the drug. Otherwise, side effects will be accelerated. For instance, QT prolongation when nilotinib is absorbed too fast with fatty a meal. Therefore, it's recommended to take it on an empty stomach. And if a patient is concerned about long-term side effects, which are currently not apparent, which advice do you give? For instance, renal impairment on imatinib, he read it on the internet, or the cardiovascular toxicity on nilotinib or ponatinib, which is currently not the case, but the patient is afraid of that. How do you advise the patient?
I think it's very important that we give them advice, and if we provide them information, that we look into that information if it's evidence-based, of course. Also important that he can raise this question with his healthcare providers, even and help him to provide him and write him down questions when he comes to the physician consultation to discuss this again and to confirm and to comfort him with the case that it's not a case in this particular drug and that it will happen. But also, if something has happened, he can call back of him when he feels something. And we do, for example, do assessments with our patients to talk about their concerns. And if it's really an anxiety, because some patients have anxiety, we can also refer, for example, to a psychologist in this case with patients. Because it's important, I think we need to strengthen the interdisciplinary approach of a patient with CML in acute setting, but also on the long-term setting, I think. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the brief discussion on this. And thank you very much for all attendees on the call.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Don't forget, there are 3 other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.